He didn't help my mother financially at all. And so she remarried because she needed financial help and because she was in love with my stepfather. And he was far more aggressive and resourceful. He was an architect and a contractor, and he had big ideas, and he knew a lot of people, and as far as my mother was concerned, a great improvement over my father, because he was a go-getter. And so we were happier. I mean, we moved to a nicer home, and my mother would never stop working. She said she would never, never give up her job. This was still a depression.
Now, where was the new house?
Well, it was in the neighborhood.
It was in Lincoln Heights?
No. Oh, no, no. You see, my father stayed in Lincoln Heights. And when my mother left my father, she left Lincoln Heights and moved to City Terrace and commuted to her job. And it was quite, I don't know how, to this day, I don't know how she did it. Because the company, you know, was quite a trip. But anyway, she did it. And so I was in Lincoln, City Terrace. And my father was in, and my brother and my sister and my grandmother were then in Lincoln Heights. And there my father stayed the rest of his life. No, and then when I went in the hospital and I came back out again, she had moved over to East Los Angeles, what's now East Los Angeles. And the company had built a new company, or a new factory there. And, you know, there's an awful lot of things that go on in your life that you are not aware of. I don't know. I didn't know what was happening. But anyway, it was a brand new factory over there in East Los Angeles. And so I guess maybe she was even commuting there, for all I know. And still quite a distance. But I was much happier, and my whole life changed once my grandmother and my sister came to live with us. And then they had some troubles, because in their minds, my life went on because I was with my mother. But they had to rearrange their own way of thinking, because now they were with me and my grandmother, and my mother, and my stepfather. And they gave up the life that they had with my father and my brother. So life can be complicated.
What was your stepfather like?
Oh, he was he had a terrific sense of humor, and very handsome. I don't know, ambitious, liked to be with celebrities. And he really, you know, I don't know how to put it to you. Nothing like my father.
No.
You know, he was from Mexico too. But everybody has a foot either in Spain or France, or either they're very proud of their Indianness. And he had a lot of Spanish in him, the real Spanish, you know. The complexion and the eyes and the personality. My mother liked him very much. But anyway, they remained married for about 10 years. And so let's say that by then it was getting towards the end of the 30s. And the depression was still on, you know, that went on and on and on. And he had four kids of his own. And his wife couldn't find work, and she had trouble feeding the family, and so she wanted alimony, and many times my mother had to pay the alimony. So he started to have arguments over money, and of course he kind of resented having us on his hands. And so the time came when we moved again, and my mother left him. And my grandmother and my sister, my mother and I formed a house of our own, rented house. My mother was still working for Continental Can, And I really felt the pressure then. I was 13 years old, right after that picture was taken that I showed you. I didn't feel the pressure then. 1 year later, my mother no longer had a husband, my father had wiped us out of his... We were visiting him, and he would always treat us beautifully, his wife wanted to make an impression on us, so for Christmas they would have us over and gifts, and it was nice, but nothing in between. So, my brother used to come over, and Juan, he spent his whole life trying to get those two, my father and my mother, together. And it never came about. In the meantime, my mother is doing better and better at work, you know. The seniority, the unions were coming in. I remember that. And she was all for the unions because they presented a picture of better working conditions and more money and vacations. And she'd been working so long that she wanted to improve her life. And she thought it was the unions that were going to do it. And so, but work is all I ever heard. And so, my sister graduated from high school, Garfield High School. And she let us know that she wanted us to graduate from high school, my sister and I. But that, of course, college was out of the question. She didn't even know that we probably should go to college. And that we were going to go to work as soon as we graduated from high school, and help her. And so, my sister went to work right after she graduated from high school, and I continued, and then she helped my mother. My grandmother never worked. My grandmother stayed home and cooked and washed and cleaned house and took care of us and saved us.
Was she the major, pardon me, the major person who did most of the housework, did you all work?
She did it all. She spoiled us. She loved my mother. She was an only child. She loved my mother so much. And she protected my mother so much. And you see, she was so young when she had her. They were almost like sisters. And so, of course, the age span there was short, even to us. My mother was 26 when she had me. So my grandmother was only 16 years older than she was, so she could very easily be our mother. And,
You were talking about your grandmother, and that she had major, did all the work at home.
At home, yeah. Well, it's all... The way women are taught in Mexico, the woman's place is, or maybe in those years and era, I don't know, the woman's place is in the home. Of course, you usually had a husband. But, so that, she did what she knew, what to do. Well, she's an excellent cook. Taught by nuns, and they were French. So she had the French, sauces, and she was an excellent cook, so my mother wasn't about to go in the kitchen, you know. Oh, we were expected to make our beds, and eventually, really, at 13, I had to start doing my own laundry, and by hand. And my mother sent out the laundry, the sheets and the towels, the big things, so life wasn't that hard. She was considerate enough to make it easier for my grandmother to be able to do the grocery shopping, manage the grocery money, and take care of the rest of the house. You understand that, can you?
Mm-hmm.
So really, we had, you know, once we got adjusted to the new schedule, as far as my sister went to work, and then she started to contribute to the family's money pool. It was then my mother and my sister working. My grandmother stayed home, and I went on with school. So you can understand why I was, at 16, I applied for a Social Security number and went to work immediately. As soon as I got my Social Security number, I went to work and at Grant's. Do you remember Grant's?
Mm-hmm.
It was a Christmas job. And then they kept me. And was I glad. Do you know the war broke out right about then? Because I was 16. And I think I was 15 when, you know, there's a very close relationship there, time-wise. So in my case, where I had been so very, very poor, and this tremendous, I now felt this tremendous responsibility to help my mother support the house, I mean, pay the rent and buy groceries and not be a burden and not ask for anything. So as soon as I went to work, my mother told me that half of my salary was mine and half was hers. And I didn't mind. I was happy to, I was proud to give her money. And even if I earned $10, I gave her $5 and I kept $5. And so it went.
Can we go back a minute? And I'd like to ask you, pardon me, what kinds of activities that you did as a child? What kinds of play?
Oh, play. Well, I think you're born with a certain personality, don't you think? And even though my parents were divorced, and I did have great needs, I always was a very optimistic child. And when I was struggling with the language, I did feel badly, defeated almost. But in the hospital, I was determined to learn the language. That was a big thing. Then, when I came out of the hospital and we lived in a new neighborhood, it meant a new school. Mm-hmm. And that also was a great help for me. The kids in school were predominantly Anglo. And there was one girl who I identified as being a Mexican girl. And so I figured, well, she can speak both languages. She'll be my friend. And so to this day, I keep telling her, Vicki, you didn't realize it then, but you just couldn't get rid of me because I didn't know how to speak English, and you could. And she says, but Gloria, you don't understand something. I couldn't speak Spanish. She said, how do we communicate? And I said, well, I don't remember. I said, it must have been sign language. But she taught me how to speak English, more or less. It was really the pressure, the environment. And I clung to Vicki and learned the language. And she became my champion in a way, you know? And it wasn't long, in the fourth grade, I was president of my class. She nominated me. I think she felt responsible for me. And after that, I was always involved in, if I was president of the class, a girl, you know, was president of the class. And the girls, I was popular. I felt popular. The kids liked me, and I was so happy. And the teachers approved of me. And I kept taking tests, IQ tests. I think they wanted to see how I was coming along. And pretty soon, they gave me so much encouragement. I had a wonderful, wonderful school. And teachers that were dedicated to teaching. And I'm so glad I was able to show you that picture, because I think you could see it in their faces, in our faces, that we were happy kids. That was the sixth grade, A6. I was president of that class, too. And it was beginning to go to my head. what have I got? But it was more, I don't know what it was, Vicki, with her, she was sort of like a little champion. You can do it, you can do it, you know. And being bigger, I grew. I was good at athletics. And I could outrun, I could out outdo anybody. I was very proud of the fact that I was good at athletics, baseball, running, and I was an A student. Then it was the grades were different in grammar school. I think they graded us by numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I was a good student. I had to be in order to learn the language. And then I had to learn everything else that went with it. And so I turned into something of a ham. My mother gave me some Spanish dancing lessons. I was still sort of, you know, proud of the heritage.
Yeah, I was going
to try to make something, prove to the world that by then we realized that we were a little bit downtrodden, but not that much. We didn't think we were downtrodden. You know, I think everybody had the idea that America was the land of opportunity, and that we could all make a success of ourselves if we tried. This was very, very important to all of us. It was preached to us. And so I was going to do it. Yeah, I was going to be somebody. Anyway.
I was going to ask you how much of your Mexican heritage was preserved in the home.
Well, the language. I'm still fluent in Spanish. And I speak Spanish to my mother. I spoke Spanish to my father to the very end. Now, this was the language. I still keep in touch with a cousin who is in Mexico, in Chihuahua, who's Ann Anchando, who never married and is very patriotic with her country. And we're worlds apart. Because I was born and raised here, and even though it was difficult, it was interesting. So I don't feel that I have any ties to Mexico. I really don't, outside of the language and interest in the language and some of the history. And I think I have sadness now because there's so much poverty there. And guilt because I didn't marry a Mexican. I was made to feel guilty by the Mexican boys, you know, because I wanted, in a way, when the time came for me to choose a husband, or it finally happens to women, I wanted to marry a Mexican, and I was going with Mexican boys. My mother didn't want me to marry a Mexican. See, she had already come this far, much, don't do it. And so she was very rude to all the fellas that I brought home that were of Mexican descent. So this is what you asked me about my heritage. I had to give it up, didn't I? And so, where was I before I brought this up? Oh, I was still Mexican in grammar school. I still am. And I was doing Spanish dancing in junior high, and I was in plays galore. Hollywood was a big thing then, and I think in the back of my mind I thought maybe. And my mother was so afraid that I would get starstruck or something, because everybody was living here in Los Angeles and running into movie stars almost. We all were very impressed with the way they dressed and the movies. The big outlet was to go to the movies on Sunday to the matinees for 10 cents. You know. It was a whole Sunday afternoon of fantasy. And so we started to fix our hair in glamorous fashions and dressing as prettily as we could. And the stage was a big thing. Of course, I think at school they detected that I wanted to be out there, you know. And I ended up being in plays and running for office and being elected. And I was very happy. And I won the American Legion Award when I was in the A9. Proud, and I was a proud American. And I had succeeded in learning the language. started downhill after not really. No, you see, by then I was 15. And so I went to Garfield High School, the B-10, and in September. And that December 7th, we were bombed by Japan. So you can understand where I was, where my frame of mind was. And the Japanese kids in our class were A students, outstanding people, and good friends of ours. You know, they mixed with us, and they were not our enemies. They were outstanding people. And they didn't show up on Monday. Not a one came to school. And I lost my Japanese friends, and I had a few.
What was that like for you?
Oh, it was sad. I got letters from one girl. Her name was Martha Yamamoto, and she was in a concentration camp. And she told me she was miserable, very unhappy. I never did write to her. I didn't know what to tell her, because the propaganda was all in force, and I was afraid they'd read my letter or something. It was that bad, you know. All the secrecy immediately went into force. So, are you cold? Should I turn the heater up?
I'm not.
Are you alright? No,
excuse me. What was the neighborhood like that you moved to after you met your second divorce? I'm wondering if it was mostly Hispanic or
no,
if they were
all Anglo. And we didn't have a man. It was all women. It was my mother, my grandmother, who was a motherly type. Even though she couldn't speak English, she was nice. They're fair people. And I think for that reason we were accepted. And clean, too. I guess that the neighborhood accepted us because my grandmother took good care of us, and I think that they respected that. Don't you think? And the fact that my mother was a steady worker. We were not floozies or loose or scandalous in any way. And, you know, we didn't bring... My mother just worked. And my grandmother just took care of the house, and we just went to school. And so... I think the neighbors probably wondered who that boy was that used to come and go all the time. My brother finally got a car, and oh, he practically lived in our house. He's a sweet guy. And we used to go visit our dad and my stepmother. No, the neighbors never knew my father at all, so that's another part of life that nobody to this day understands. My friends don't understand it. So anyway, but... No, it was predominantly Anglo. And this is East Los Angeles. Families who've been there for many, many years. They built their own little house. When I say Anglo, it could be Finland or Norway or Russian. And also, too, as I grew older, I realized that there were pockets of Russians and then Jewish. Boyle Heights was all Jewish. And really, that's where we lived. It's now all lumped into East Los Angeles. But I really lived in Boyle Heights. But I lived right on the boundary, where over here was Roosevelt, and this is where it was all predominantly Jewish. And Roosevelt High School was predominantly a Jewish high school, Jewish students. And very proud of their scholastic standing and college-bound, you know. Now, Garfield, too, you know, but the majority of the kids were cosmopolitan, really, you know. And when we went there, there were Japanese, and there were just every imaginable nationality. And we were proud of that. We were a proud bunch. I sometimes think that that's how come we won the war. But...
Were your friends then from many different ethnic backgrounds?
Up until I went to high school, my friends were Russians, they were Japanese, they were cosmopolitan. And that's why I was so proud when I won that American Legion Award, because my dream had come true. You see, we were just one happy family. And that was junior high, that was right in the middle between Roosevelt and Garfield. And then the kids, you know, lived on this side of Indiana, went to Roosevelt, and the rest of us went to Garfield. And we had to take a bus because it was 5 miles to high school. And there's where I did notice then that there were lines drawn. And that's the first I ever heard prejudice preached, you know. And, of course, the war came along and the prejudice continued. But then we forgot about it because we were all fighting the war. It was there. It was definitely there. But I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that it would affect to anybody, that prejudice was as strong as it really is. But I didn't.
Prejudice just directed at the Japanese or at others?
Well, it hadn't been. It hadn't been, you see, at all. But the nation's focus then was prejudice against Hitler and against the Axis powers and Japan as a nation. And the Japanese who were here just drew immediately. Overnight, they were gone. So they didn't suffer any jibes. They didn't hear them. Not from the high school kids that I was involved with. But we got it all the time. I think we were getting, you see, I was getting, you know, growing up. Yeah, we noticed it, but we had a lot of faith in ourselves. We felt that if we worked hard and that if we proved ourselves, that we too could become doctors and lawyers and professional people. And we wanted to go to college. College was important to us, thinking about it. But how, in my case, the teachers were telling me to go for the academic classes. Right? And so they used to, they had two, like English, in English. I had studied English for many years. I was very good at English. I let the math go, but English I was good at. So if you can read, you can study. So they put me in academic classes, which were a little bit harder, but I handled it all right. But I knew I wasn't going to college. My mother wasn't going to send me to college. And I told them that I'm not going to college. Still, though, the thought was there that maybe until I decided, well, I'm not going to college. I'll join the WACs or the WAVES or something. Instead, I went to work for Avion. And to me, you know, I felt like I had given up a dream, because it was sad for me because it was a factory, and I didn't really want to work in a factory. But we needed the money at home, and I gave up the school, the classes. Went on the 4-4 plan that I told you about. And I started work at Avion. I think we started about 7:30 a.m. And did you want me to tell you about the assembly that we had, or does it matter?
Yeah, I do, but I want to ask you some other questions first and then get to that.
Okay.
I'd like to ask you... Well, first of all, I'd like to ask you if you were prepared at all by anyone for menstruation, if you were told about menstruation before it happened, that it was going to happen.
No.
What was it like for you when it came?
Well, I had an older sister, and everything was a big secret, you know. Of course, by then, I think I had already started to develop a little bit, and I couldn't wait to grow up, you know. I was already looking at the boys, and they were so cute, and, nobody, my mother, everything was taboo, you know. My mother was, they were very strict with us as far as preaching from the very early youth is be a lady and be careful. My mother had given up her religion, even though she was raised in a convent. We became Baptists. So my stepfather was a Baptist. So all this time that I hadn't mentioned to you that I was